All right. So, what we just did then was go through the whole phonetic stuff that I introduced last week and relating it to the articulatory system, showing how there was a direct relationship between the way that phoneticians study this and how we can characterize the sounds language independently, and there's a direct relationship between that and the sound production mechanism, which is not a surprise. Okay? So what I'm going to do now is essentially the same idea, but I'm now tying it up with the acoustics. So what we just did was tie it all together with the articulations. Now, in other words, the physiology. What I want to do now is tying in with the acoustics. So, the last one, hopefully you don't need reminding since it was only 10 minutes ago. Right, articulatory phonetics is a description of speech sounds in terms of the physical actions performed. Acoustic phonetics is a description of speech sounds in terms of the acoustic consequences of their production. So what do we mean by acoustic consequences? Well, you've seen this already, right? We've seen waveforms, sound pressure waveforms. That's an acoustic consequence. You've seen spectra. So this is a two-dimensional graph of the energy at different frequencies. Okay, you've seen that. And you've also seen the most informative of all, which is the spectrogram, where we've got time versus frequency and the amplitude in the grayscale, and you by now should be familiar with some of the things you can see in a spectrogram. For example, you can see the resonances, those are the horizontal black lines, and you can also, this is a wideband spectrogram, so you can also see the vertical lines, which are the striations caused by the individual coming together of the vocal cords. Okay, so these are, this is what we mean by acoustic consequences. In other words, how does all this phonetic stuff relate to things like spectra and spectrograms in particular? Okay, so to make it easy, we're going to start with sounds which are known as continuants. These are sounds which you can just make forever or as long as you've got breath. So these are non-changing sounds. So all the monophthong vowels, so E, you can hold it for as long as you can breathe. All the fricatives are continuant sounds. So shh. You can see how this is going to make them easy to analyze, right? Because we can just generate a lot of them. Some of the approximants, like r and l, not all, but those, and all the nasals. So these are all continuant sounds, very easy to analyze. So you remember we saw this in one of the lectures. So I was relating the shape to the spectra. Okay, do you remember that? So now we can label this phonetically. We had all the examples as, you know, heat, heat, head, but now you know that we can symbolize that. So there you can see the vowel symbols, e, I, e, a, r, or, and u. And the spectra, of course, here, you know that the peaks in the spectra, so when you have a rise in energy at a particular frequency, that corresponds to a resonance in one of the tubes, most likely the oral cavity, and that those have this special name of formants. And so for each of these shapes, for each of these spectra, we can go in and we notice that the first peak, that's F1, the first resonance of the tube, and the second peak is the second resonance of the tube, that's F2. Okay, so you had all this before, but I'm just tying it all up together now. Okay, so this is what I want to show you now, something rather impressive. This is a famous data set collected many, many years ago of various vowel sounds, sustained vowels, for a bunch of male speakers, 33 male speakers. So what they've done is they've collected all these vowels, they've measured the F1 frequency, they've measured F2 frequency by looking at the spectra. So we've got the different vowels plotted in different colours, and we've got F1 on the horizontal axis, the first resonant frequency, right, which you can see roughly is in the range 200 to 800 hertz. The vertical axis is the second resonance, that's F2. And you can see that F2 is in the range sort of 500 to 2500 hertz. Okay, so, and then you've got some interesting kind of distribution there, and you can see all the different vowels. Now what I'm going to do, so that's the classic Peterson and Barney data. So there we have it with F1 and F2, normal axes. I'm going to rotate this clockwise, okay? So now we've basically just got F2 along the horizontal axis and F1 running down. I'm now going to reverse the horizontal axis, to switch it round. So we've got F2 running down still, but F1 running down still. F2 is now running from right to left. And you might be saying, why is he doing all this? Because I can then overlay that on the vowel quadrilateral, and you can immediately see that all the vowels are in the right place. So that vowel quadrilateral wasn't just a random shape. Nobody said, oi, why is it a quadrilateral? You just took it from me that open and close and, you know, was okay. But it actually comes directly from the data. This is how the data is distributed. And it's narrower at the bottom and wider at the top. Okay? So there's a nice fit, really nice fit there between this vowel recordings and the vowel quadrilateral. And you can see all the vowels are in more or less the right place. So we've got in the vowel quadrilateral, therefore, we had open and close and forward and back, but we can also say that open and close relates to F1, first formant resonance, and that the forward back relates directly to F2. So here's actually some English vowels on the F1, F2 space. There we've got F1, 200 to 900 hertz, F2, 500 to 3000 hertz, and we can see the different vowels in different places. Okay, so that's something one can do experimentally. Be a great assignment for this course, but actually you're not going to be doing that. Okay, so let's look at some spectrograms of some sustained vowels. So here is an E, and you should see obviously that it's sustained, so there's nothing interesting going on. It's just a single sound. It's just me, in fact, going E. Okay, you can see the formants. You can see the it's a wideband spectrogram, so you can see the vertical structure as well. If we take a long-term spectrum, so if you take the spectrum, you have a choice of maybe looking only at part of a sound. If it's 3 seconds long, you maybe could look at just what's going on around 1 second mark. This is a long-term spectrum, so we've actually taken the average spectrum over the whole thing, and because it's essentially unchanging, that just gives us a lovely smooth view of what's going on. And so you can see the peaks there. And you'll notice that you can see F1, F2, F3, F4, F5, F6. Because remember, way back when we were talking about tubes, that the resonances just go on and up in frequency, but they get smaller and smaller amplitudes. Okay? And remember also that they have very nice relationships with each other if you have a uniform tube. But if you have a non-uniform tube, and for E, you certainly have a non-uniform tube, then these different resonances are all in different places depending on that particular shape. So we have, in E, we have a very low first formant. And then we've got a huge gap, which you can see on the spectrogram, and you can see on the spectrum, because we've got a low F1, it's about 300 hertz. Then we've got a huge gap because we've got a high F2, okay, which is actually over 2 kilohertz. Big gap in the middle. Well, that's what all the white space is on the spectrogram. And if we look at the there's the other resonances, and if we look at the chart for British English vowels, low F1 means we're going to be high on this chart. High F2 means we're going to be on the left of this chart, and surprise, surprise, that's where E is. Okay, so just showing how all this goes together. So that's E, low F1, high F2, and puts it in the top left-hand corner of the vowel quadrilateral. So let's do another one. This is R. So now we've got a high F1, right? We've got a low F2. So these two formats have come together, and we've got a big gap, and then the other formats. So high F1 is going to mean we are, in the vertical chart, we're going to be down. And a low F2 means we're going to be on the right, which means we are over here, and that is indeed where R is. Okay? So the mouth is open, so that leads to high F1 and a low F2. So, what's this? Well, we've got high F2 and a high F1. Both are high, so that must mean we are down on the chart and to the left. So we must be in the quadrilateral, vowel quadrilateral, sort of bottom left corner. Okay, high F1 and high F2. So there's the vowel quadrilateral. So we must be there, and that is indeed ah. Ah. Okay, wide open, tongue a little bit forwards. High F1, high F2. Here's another one where we've got a low F1 and a low F2. And what we have here, therefore, is it must be that we're up in the top right-hand corner. And that is indeed an oo sound. So there's a direct relationship between these resonances and where we are in the vowel quadrilateral. Okay, so that's just how you can see the relationship and how you can interpret the spectrograms and the energy at different frequencies. So what happens now if we've got two vowels? So here's an E on the left, an R on the front, and if we say ER, ER, then we get a lovely smooth transition between the formants. So E has low F1 and high F2, R has high F1 and low F2, and so what we've just seen is a transition which has taken us from the top left to the bottom right. Okay? ER. So you can see that works very well in the chart, and you can see visually on the spectrogram exactly what's going on. So that's a simple change of sound, ER. Okay, so we can simulate this. You probably wonder where PD had gone. So do you recall that I was generating vowel sounds using two resonances, and I just had a sort of a blank gem window, and I was just moving around randomly, showing I can make different sounds. What you didn't realise, of course, is that there's structure in there. So let's run it up, and you'll see exactly what I mean. So this is exactly the same program we saw before, except previously it was a blank gem window, but now I've brought in a photo. Eventually. Come on, PD, where are you? Usually I start PD in advance of the lecture, and I forgot this time. Right. So exactly the same code over here, and we're controlling the two formants with the cursor over here, but you'll notice I've now overlaid that window with the vowel quadrilateral. And so now this behaviour should be completely interpretable to you. Make it a bit louder. Schwa. Right, so there's now, you can see this direct relationship, and with just a simple synthesizer we can go between them, and I can still do how are you, because I want to go, there's a, ow, ah, you, you. Good. Wow. Thank you. now I have to kill this without killing my computer. Right. So we can do that for synthesis. Can we do it for recognition? Can we come up with a very simple piece of code which detects where my formant peaks are and place a dot on the vowel quadrilateral? Well, the answer is usually no, but we'll give it a go. So what I'm going to do now is run this. So you have these examples. Now, this is a format tracker, and format tracking is notoriously difficult because it's easy to point to these peaks in the spectrum and say, well, there's F1. But when you see real speech, you'll discover quite quickly this is a huge challenge. It's a big problem. So, in fact, it's already working. How about that? I was going to change the microphone, but it looks like it's fine. So you notice, as I'm talking, you can see the blob going all over the place. So let's see if it's reasonable. So, E, A, A, no, that's all wrong. Ooh, yeah. Anyway, you can see it's doing a sort of a job. And basically what's, if you have a look at the code that's on the right-hand side doing the real-time analysis of my speech, it's essentially analysing the centre of gravity, where the mass of energy is in the spectrum with respect to some a sort of pivot point, a sort of between F1 and F2 ranges. So it's a very, very simple idea. It's just kind of a balance here as to where these two formats are. So there's two detectors, one for F1 and one for F2. It's setting up the range, and it's basically saying, where's the centre of gravity of energy in the range? And it's a really, really crude approximation to doing format tracking. Anyway, there you go. So we've done synthesis and analysis of formats in the 2D space and related it directly to the phonetics. Good. That worked a bit better than it usually does, so that's fantastic. Right. So that's that one, and that's that one. Okay, so let's have a look at a few more sounds now. So those were the vowels. Let's look at some of the consonants. So here's some voiceless fricatives. So we've got f, f, s, and sh, right? F, f, s, sh. So what you notice is there's no energy at the bottom. Why is that? Why am I pointing out there's no energy at the bottom? At the low frequencies?
Because they don't have fundamental frequencies.
Because?
They don't have the harmonic reach.
No, no. Well, yes, okay. Well, we have a word for that.
Fundamental frequencies.
Right, but what is missing? Voicing. There is no voicing. It says at the top they're voiceless fricatives, right? So all you're seeing is the turbulence. And you'll notice that the spectra are different. So that's what you hear, the difference between s and sh. You can kind of see in the sh, there's a little bit more lower energy, lower frequency energy. S, sh, sh, sh. You can hear that there's more low frequency energy in the sh than the s. That's what we can see. Right, so here are the voiced versions. Now, so voiceless was f, f, s, and sh. And the voiced versions are v, v, z, and z. Voicing is going. But notice it's not very strong. It's not very strong. And that means because when you're producing a turbulent sound, the amount of energy that's going into the voicing is a bit lower. Right? So the voicing is there, but it's not very, very strong. So actually detecting the difference between a voiced and a voiceless consonant, especially a fricative, can be also quite tricky. Anyway, but you can see it. You can see a little bit of voicing there. But you'll notice that the frication, the turbulence, is essentially the same. Because it's the same place. And it's the same manner. The only thing that's changed is the voicing. So here are some nasals. So we've got m, n, and m. Now these might look a bit weird to you, because we haven't really looked at these sorts of sounds. Look at all this energy load right at the bottom. So if we bring up the long-term spectra, we can see what looks like a very prominent F1. Now, it's not F1. This is another reason why format tracking can be difficult. That low frequency resonance is the resonance inside the nasal cavity. Nasal cavity is pretty long, so that's a low frequency resonance. Okay, so that is not F1. F1 is the next peak along. So the F1 and F2 are coming from the oral cavity. This is the nasal cavity resonance that we're seeing. And it's very, very low frequency because the tube is long compared to the oral cavity. Okay? So you can see by doing acoustic analysis, we can derive quite a lot of information about the different sounds. So those are the easy ones because they're continuant and we can just make a long recording and do some simple analysis. But the interesting thing about speech, of course, is that we're changing the sounds all the time and many sounds involve change. So diphthongs, A, ow, involve change. All the plosives are changing over time, puttaka, buttaka. The affricates, ch, and the glides. There's movement involved. So the analysis is therefore a bit more interesting. So let's look at some voiceless plosives. And in order to study them, you would typically not just go, you put them in a context. In this case, it is very normal to have them in a vowel, R-vowel context. So this is R-pa, okay? And R-ta, and R-ka. So what you're looking at, obviously the R bits are very similar. What you're looking at is what's going on in the middle. And you can hear and see that the acoustics are quite different. And in particular, look at the T. You notice how that middle one, the T, the R-ta, there's that sort of what looks like a small S in the middle. And in fact, T, T has the same place of articulation as an S. The tongue is at the alveolar ridge. So the explosion for a T is actually like a very, very short S. In fact, you can play around with a synthesizer, and if you make a very short S, you will hear a T, because it's the same place of articulation. So it's all about the timing. So we've got our pa, explosion at the lips, our ta, explosion at the alveolar ridge, and our ka, explosion further back at the velum, in the velar area. So those were the voiceless ones. Here's the voiced equivalents. So we've got our ba, our da, and our ga. Now you'll see some similarity with the voiceless, but if you were hoping to see lots of voicing along the bottom, it's not there. The difference between voiced and voiceless stops is not primarily in the voicing at the moment of explosion, as we'll see in a moment. So I'll explain all that. So you can see there's some differences. The R's are the same. You can also notice the energy is much lower. So our ta is quite a big explosion. Our da, the explosion is pretty low, much, much lower energy because of the energy that's going into organising the voicing to make sure you could tell the difference between the ta and the da. Everything else is the same. They're both alveolar stops. Okay, so let me just dwell on this difference then. So here we've got our ta and our da, and now you can see the difference between them is mostly in the timing. In fact, what we talk about is voice onset time. So we're going to put some lines on the spectrum here. So what I've done is lined up, that line is lining up the explosion, the release of energy, because we need to anchor it somehow. So that's where the explosion occurs. And you can see that everything to the left is pretty much the same. And then we come into the consonant. For the ta, we have this big, long release. And then the vowel starts a bit later. Whereas for the da, we've got a very short release, and the vowel starts early. So that second line in the ta is what we call the voice onset time. It's the difference, the timing difference between the release of the stop and the start of voicing. And in the voiceless case, you can see that's quite long. Okay, that's VOT. In the voice case, the vowel starts very close to the release. Okay, so we've got a very short VOT. So the difference between a voicing in this, in these oral stops is in the VOT. The voiced VOT is a lot less than voiceless VOT. And the difference between, so although we perceive it as voicing, actually it's all about the timing. Unlike in the fricative case, where the voicing is there or not at the same time. In these sounds, it's all about the relative timing of things. But we're perceiving it as voiced or voiceless. Okay. Same is true for the affricates. So here we've got at the top our cha, and at the bottom we've got our jar. So if I do the same thing, you can see that the R-jar onset is significantly faster than the R-char. Okay. And so that longer explosion is perceived as voiceless, and the shorter explosion is perceived as voiced. And the reason these differences matter, as we're going to see next week, is that that can cue the difference between one word and another. Okay. It can change the meaning of a word. So that's why these things are heavily studied, and why we're interested in just what's going on. Okay. This is just, now we're into looking at spectrograms and interpreting them. I just want to introduce you to something I mentioned last week, just so as you know. I did point out on the vowel on the IPA chart, there was an area called diacritics, and I said you can use diacritics, or a phonetician can use diacritics, to make very, very fine transcriptions. It's called a fine phonetic transcription. So, you know, you guys right now are capable of doing something quite crude. You could get probably the right symbols with a little bit of practice, but a trained phonetician will be not just using the right symbol, but will be putting all little marks around it to indicate precisely what they're hearing. This is important if they're studying somebody with a speech pathology or, you know, a language which has never been studied before. Anyway, that's what the diacritics are for. So I just wanted to give you an example of where you can use a diacritic. So you now know that P is a voiceless bilabial stop, and it occurs in these two words. It occurs in the word speech, and it occurs in the words peach. However, if you look at the spectrograms, those P's are very different, and that's because of the context in which they're occurring. So for speech, there's a lot of energy already going into the S by the time you come to the P. So you're sort of running, I won't say running out of energy, but you see what I mean. The way that the energy is being distributed is different. So we don't get a very big explosion in speech, whereas in peach we do. Now, if you don't believe me, lick your fingers, put it in front of your mouth, and say the two words, speech and peach, and you can feel a massive explosion with the P in peach compared to speech, right? So, we can see it in the spectrogram. We can also transcribe it phonetically. If we just put P's, we would not be fully capturing the difference. Whereas we can use a diacritic, so a trained phonetician would put a little H above the P in peach. And what that little H means is that it's aspirated. And that just means there's quite a lot of energy in the explosion. So it's just an example of how you might use a diacritic to tease apart things which otherwise, differences which might be lost, which we can see acoustically, and we can also use the transcription system to capture that. Okay, so that's aspiration. Right, so this is probably a question that's in a lot of your minds. What on earth has this got to do with speech processing? Well, here's an example. This is a friend of mine, actually, at the University of Washington. Did some very nice work a few years ago, building a speech recognizer which could detect sounds for someone who is wanting to, in this case, browse using Google or something, Google Maps, but they have no means of controlling the computer. They are, but because they are physically disabled, but they can use their voice. So you get the idea. Now, that's called the vocal joystick. That would also be a nice assignment, wouldn't it, for this course? But I'm also not setting that. But that's, it just shows what you can do with some simple speech processing, although it's not that simple, but something you could actually do just knowing about the sounds and trying to build algorithms to detect them and building an app which might be useful for somebody. Okay. Right. So we're getting towards now dealing with actual words and utterances. So we now understand something about the parts, and what we're interested in now is how it's all going together. So this is the spectrogram for the word speech. Okay, and hopefully you can now start to recognize some of the components in the spectrogram and relate them. And the way this is typically done is that we were going to carve this up acoustically. So you might imagine writing a program to do this, looking for changes. And segmenting. So segmenting speech, that's the title. Yeah. So segmenting speech is a thing that's often required to be done automatically. And so if we're just looking at spectral changes, then those would be the lines that you might get, or the boundaries, the segments. Now the first thing you notice is there seem to be a lot more segments, acoustic segments, than phonetic segments. Anybody know why that is? Why are there more? Why have we got loads more acoustic segments? We've got transitions, yes, sort of. So these are the acoustic segmentation points, and those are the acoustic segments. So we've got a lot more than phonetic segments. The answer is P and CH have structure because they're both stops. So the phonetic segments are like this. So S is one big segment. It's a continuant sound. But P is not a continuant sound. P has three bits to it. It has an approach. So that is basically when the closure is formed. So whatever's going on will decay as the pressure builds up. Then you have what's called the stop gap. So the pressure is now probably still building, but the sound, all sound is stopped. So you see, nothing happens just like that. You form the closure, the pressure starts to build, the vocal cords, if they're vibrating, will start to slow and stop. All other sound will cease. We then have a period with no sound. Then we've got the explosion. That's called the stop burst. So P, as an oral stop, P has three acoustic segments. Okay, so that's not surprising. CH is the same. And by the way, I've also put there's a little bit of aspiration at the end there, which I didn't really want to do, but whoever said this, it was me, said speech, which was wrong. I should have just said speech, but because I was making a recording for a lecture, I emphasised the CH, which led to a bit of aspiration. So it gives me an excuse to mark it, so we can actually see that there's a rather little bit of a breath at the end, which wouldn't normally be there. But we can mark it. Okay, so here are some of the words that we were looking at before in terms of the complexity and vowels and consonants and syllables and what have you. So this is crisps. We can mark that up in the usual way. So we've got acoustic mark boundaries, and we've got obviously a stop release there, and it looks like this. So R is a sort of dynamic sound, a little bit of a curve going on. We've got I. There's the nice big S. There's the stop, P. And then we've got S again at the end. Crisps. And remember this one, the longest syllable in English, strengths. And again, we can mark it all up, and we can annotate it. And here we have it again. So all the stops there have several segments. And some of the other sounds are in there as well. Okay, so you get the idea. So this is what we can do in segmentation. Now, so what you've just been doing is kind of trying to read a spectrogram. And believe it or not, very early in the field, there was a view that what we're just trying to do, and in fact building the app that you just saw, was actually impossible. Because people seem to be so good at recognizing speech with very poor acoustics that everybody's thought, well, the information basically isn't there. Mostly people are guessing what's being said. And people are so good at speech recognition, even though the input is lacking the information that you require. Well, a few people didn't believe that. I was one of those. But Victor Zhu here, head of the speech lab at MIT, thought, well, this is ridiculous. I'm going to prove that information is in there, and I'm going to teach myself to read spectrograms. And he not only succeeded, but he ran courses for many, many years teaching people how to read spectrograms in the same way that, you know, we've just been trying to do. So you just take a spectrogram and you figure out what somebody has said. And he showed it, and he indeed showed you could do it. So here's the spectrogram. Anybody want to read it? Yes, whoever just went S, you are correct. It starts with S. So there's a gap there, so that's some kind of stop after that S. And then we've got a vowel, and we've got another stop. Okay, anybody ready to guess? Have you used? Okay, I'll put you out of your misery. Well, so we can segment it up and ask about all those individual sounds. And of course, it is the spectrogram for spectrogram. That's the word spectrogram. Okay? But now you see there's a pretty nice relationship between the patterns and the sounds. Okay. So it's a spectrogram. Okay, so now another quiz for you. A little bit of context. That was wide open. It could have been any word. But now we'll have some context. So these are just digits. So we've got four here. What are these digits? So let's have a few shout-outs on any of them. What do you think? Which one? Zero we've got for the first one. Anybody like to agree with that? Everybody happy with that? You are correct. What are any others? We've only got 0 to 9 as a choice. Thank you. Which one? Bottom right. Everybody happy that bottom right might be 6? Okay, you are correct. Others? Did I hear? I heard somebody shout something. 4. Mm-hmm. What would you expect to see for that long or vowel? Yeah. Yeah. Not there, is it? No. I'm hearing a 5. Which one? Which one? Okay, shall I put you out of your misery? We've got 2. So 0 is correct. 3. The giveaway is the massive E at the end, right? And R is a sort of very dynamic sound. So you should have been thinking, well, it's sort of a fricative and it ends with an E. Well, that's got to be 3, right? 5, somebody was shouting 5, I don't know if you meant that one. So again, we've got a fricative, and we've again ending with E, but there's something else going beyond that. So we've got some frication beyond that. And then, indeed, whoever shouted out 6. By the way, that's a brilliant example. You might think, well, this is all dead easy, so speech recognizers are easy. But look at that ear. Those formats are moving. They're not static. And that just gives you a little hint as to why actually speech recognition is quite tricky. These things are not the neatly packaged, beautifully stable patterns that I might be misleading you into thinking. It's much more interesting. Okay, right. What's that? Now, think. What can you see there? Or rather, what can't you see? Anybody know what the word is? Speaking. You've seen it before. It's not speaking, but it's a very good guess. I'm hearing spectrogram. Could it be spectrogram? Looks quite a lot like spectrogram. But there's something weird about it. Why am I keep saying there's something weird about it? What can't you see? All right, let me ask you a direct question. Are the vocal cords vibrating through this utterance? Oh. They're not. So what is it? What's going on? Would you like to say that out loud?
Is someone whispering the same word?
It is a whisper. That's the clue. That's the spectrogram of spectrogram. And it's whispered speech. Spectrogram. You can speak perfectly well without using your vocal cords. By generating frication at the where your vocal cords would normally be vibrating, you're generating turbulence, and so you're exciting all the tubes with a rich noise source rather than a rich harmonic source. That's what it looks like. So you can see the same pattern structure, you can see the formats, but it's very noisy because you're exciting it with turbulence, not with voicing. So that's whispered speech. Okay, good. No voicing. Right, so I think we're going to be bang on time. So I hinted a moment ago how life is not as easy as I'm perhaps painting it, and I showed you some formats which are moving, which you'd like to be stable. In fact, there are a lot of issues here that I'm sort of covering up, so I'll just mention one, which is something called co-articulation. Now, what all co-articulation means is that you have, when you are speaking, it is an actively managed dynamic process. And so you are sort of dynamically planning kind of the next sound and the next sound as you're speaking. What that means is that one sound can colour another. Now, a lot of people take a very superficial view of this and say, oh, well, it's because sounds are next to each other, they're just sort of interfering. But it's actually much more long-range effects occur. For example, if a nasalized vowel is coming up maybe several syllables ahead and it doesn't matter, then you might choose to lower the vellum and every single sound up to that point is nasalized. This is clearly very language dependent because it depends what sounds are significant in different languages. Okay, but it's all about careful motor planning. So these are short range effects and long range effects from a machine learning or speech processing point of view. These are context dependencies, and they are short range or long range context dependencies. So if you're building models, then you can't build models which only have an individual view. You have to have models which have some context dependency, in other words, some memory built in to the process. So do you remember this? Why are you early, you owl? And I was saying, well, where are the boundaries between the words? Well, I'm going to mess with you now and say, well, where's the boundary between the phonetic sounds? And the answer is they're just horrendously overlapped, and all this beautifully smooth constructed signal is only loosely related to the phonetic transcription system that we've now got. And this is the kind of thing that makes building speech recognizers quite tough. Okay, so there we are, bang on time. So that's what we've covered, and we will next time be looking at phonology and prosody, and then lecture 10, that's lecture 9, if I'm right. Is that right? Yes. And then lecture 10 is a kind of overview, revision-y thing, which you don't want to miss if you want to do well in the quiz. Okay.